The call came in just after dawn, an unresponsive woman inside an Illinois apartment. Quiet street, no signs of a break-in. When officers stepped through the door, they found Ciandria Davis where she had fallen. A mother, a partner nearby, a home that was supposed to be safe. At first, it looked like another domestic dispute gone wrong, but the room told a different story. The stillness, the timing, the gaps in what was being said. Paramedics confirmed she was gone. Detectives sealed the scene. Questions stacked fast. Who was the last person with her? What happened behind closed doors? How long had the violence been building without anyone seeing it? As the hours passed, pressure closed in on one man, not because of what he admitted, because of what the evidence refused to ignore. This was not sudden. It was not random. It was the final moment in a pattern that had stayed hidden until it turned fatal. Chapter 1, The Call. The dispatcher's voice stayed calm as the words moved across the line. Unresponsive female. Apartment complex in Illinois. Early morning, no report of a weapon, no mention of a struggle, just a woman who was not answering. Patrol cars rolled in within minutes. The building was quiet, the kind of quiet that sits heavy when something is already wrong. Neighbors watched from behind doors and blinds. No one was yelling, no one was running. That calm did not match the call. Officers knocked. No response. They announced themselves again. When the door finally opened, the air inside felt stale and closed. A man stood back from the entrance. He said her name. He said she would not wake up. They moved in fast but controlled. Training took over. Check for hazards. Scan the room. Locate the victim. On the floor of the apartment lay Ciandria Davis, a mother, an adult woman in her own home. She was not breathing. Paramedics followed close behind. They knelt. They checked for signs of life. There were none. Time of death was called inside the apartment. No sirens, no rush to the ambulance, just the quiet shift from rescue to investigation. Officers stepped back and looked again. This was not a public space, no forced entry, no shattered glass, no signs of an intruder pushing in from outside. The door had been closed. The people inside knew each other. The man in the apartment was identified as her partner. He said he had found her that way. He said he tried to wake her. He said he called for help when she would not respond. His words came out steady, but the timeline was thin. Investigators noted it without comment. The apartment was secured. Yellow tape went up. A patrol officer stood watch at the door. Detectives were notified. This was no longer a medical call. It was a death inside a private residence with unanswered questions. Inside, the scene was preserved as it was found. Furniture placement, lighting, temperature. What was out of place mattered just as much as what was not. A quiet room can still speak. Detectives arrived and began their work slowly. They photographed the space. They documented where Ciandria Davis lay. They noted the condition of her body without speculation. No public conclusions, just facts. The partner was separated from the scene. He was not arrested. Not yet. He was asked to wait. Officers kept him within view. Standard procedure. Everyone close becomes a source of information before they become anything else. A preliminary timeline was built. When she was last seen alive, when the partner said he went to sleep, when he said he woke up, when the call was made, each point was written down. Each would be tested later. Detectives asked simple questions first. Who else had been there? Whether anyone had visited? Whether there had been arguments? The answers came quickly, too quickly, some thought. But that alone proved nothing. There were no obvious signs of a burglary, no missing electronics reported at that moment, no overturned drawers. The apartment looked lived in, not torn apart. That narrowed the field but did not close it. Neighbors were approached, quiet knocks, low voices in hallways. Some said they heard nothing. Others said they heard raised voices earlier but could not say when or between whom. Memory is fragile, especially before anyone knows a crime has occurred. Detectives documented those statements carefully. They did not push yet. They knew details often surface after the shock wears off. The medical examiner was contacted. The body would need to be transported for autopsy. Cause of death could not be determined at the scene. That mattered. Without it, nothing could move forward. As the body was prepared for transport, the weight of the moment settled. A mother was gone. Her children were not in the apartment at the time. That fact was confirmed early and noted with relief by officers who had seen too many scenes involving young witnesses. The partner was informed that she had died. He nodded. He asked what would happen next. He was told investigators would need to speak with him further. He agreed. No resistance. No outburst. That calm did not clear him. It did not condemn him either. It simply became another detail in a growing file. Back at the scene, detectives focused on the last known hours, phone locations, call logs, messages. These would come later through warrants. But the questions started now. Who did she speak to? Who knew she was home? Who would have reason to be there? Nothing in the apartment suggested a stranger attack. The working assumption stayed narrow but unspoken. When a woman is killed inside her home, investigators look first at the people closest to her. That is not bias. It is statistics. Still, assumptions were kept off paper. Every step had to be clean. Any mistake here could break the case later. The scene was released only after every corner was documented. Evidence bags were sealed. The door was locked. The apartment that had been a shared space hours earlier became a sealed point in time. Outside, daylight had fully broken. The complex returned to its normal rhythm. Cars came and went. People went to work. Life moved on around a building where it had stopped for one family. Detectives regrouped and reviewed what they had. A death, a partner present, no forced entry, no immediate explanation. That was enough to move forward, but not enough to accuse. They knew the next phase would be slower and harder. Scenes rarely tell the full story on their own. People do, patterns do, records do. For now, the only certainty was this. Ciandria Davis was dead. She had died inside the apartment she shared with the person she trusted most. And whatever had happened in those final hours was not yet fully visible. The pressure of the case began to build, not with sirens or headlines, but with silence, the kind that waits to be filled with facts. Chapter 2, What Was Hidden? By the time the autopsy was scheduled, investigators already knew the case would not turn on a single dramatic reveal. There was no mystery intruder to hunt, no unknown suspect to identify. The work ahead would be slower. It would depend on history, pattern, and pressure. The medical examiner's report did not arrive immediately. That gap mattered. Until cause and manner of death were confirmed, everything else stayed provisional. Detectives used the time to build context. They started with the relationship. Friends and family described Ciandria Davis as private, not withdrawn, not isolated, just careful about what she shared. She worked, she raised her children, she showed up. Nothing about her outward life suggested a crisis unfolding behind closed doors. Her partner, according to those closest to them, could be charming. He could also be controlling. That duality appeared again and again in interviews. The same phrase surfaced repeatedly. He was fine in public, different at home. Investigators did not label this abuse at first. They recorded behavior, jealousy framed as concern, monitoring disguised as protection, arguments that stayed private, apologies that came fast after blowups. None of it illegal on its own, all of it relevant in sequence. Phone records began to matter. Not the content yet, just frequency and timing, who called whom, how often, late-night messages, missed calls, patterns that spoke without words. Detectives noticed something else. In the weeks leading up to her death, Ciandria had pulled back from some contacts, fewer check-ins, shorter conversations. Again, not proof. But when placed against what others described, it raised questions. The partner was brought in for a formal interview. Not under arrest, not accused. He agreed to talk. The room was neutral. No raised voices, no confrontational tactics. Investigators asked him to walk through the relationship from the beginning. He spoke confidently at first. He minimized conflict. He framed arguments as mutual. He said they both got emotional. He said nothing had been physical recently. Then detectives asked him to repeat his timeline from the night before her death. The times shifted slightly, not dramatically. Minutes moved, details blurred. He corrected himself without prompting. Each correction was noted. This was not a confession. It was not even a clear lie. It was inconsistency. And inconsistency creates pressure. Forensic results began to come in. The medical examiner ruled the death a homicide. Cause was determined in a manner consistent with interpersonal violence. The findings ruled out natural causes. They also ruled out accident. That changed everything. Now detectives were no longer asking whether a crime occurred. They were asking how it happened and who caused it. The partner was informed of the ruling. His demeanor changed. He denied harming her. He said there had been an argument. He said things got heated. He insisted he never meant to hurt her. Investigators stopped him there. Intent would be addressed later. Right now, they needed clarity. They confronted him with specific contradictions, not accusations, facts. Where he said he was, what his phone showed, what neighbors heard. The room stayed quiet as the gaps narrowed. Outside the interview room, detectives reviewed additional records. Prior police contacts, there were none that resulted in charges, no documented domestic violence arrests, no protection orders on file. That absence did not help the defense as much as it once might have. Investigators had seen this pattern before. Abuse often lives in the space before paperwork exists. Friends recalled moments that made sense only in hindsight. Bruises explained away. Sudden cancellations. A phone always kept close. These accounts were documented carefully, labeled as witness recollection, not proof. The evidence was building, but it was still fragile. Every piece had to be corroborated. Every claim had to be grounded. Digital evidence strengthened the case. Location data placed the partner inside the apartment during the critical window. No gaps, no unexplained movement. He had not left and returned. He had been there. That did not prove murder by itself, but it eliminated alternatives. Investigators returned to the scene photographs. They reviewed them with fresh eyes, now informed by the medical findings. Subtle details took on new meaning. Not gore, not dramatics, just alignment between physical evidence and forensic conclusions. The partner was interviewed again. This time, the tone shifted. Still calm, still professional, but firmer. Investigators laid out what they could prove. They told him this was no longer about suspicion, it was about evidence. He responded defensively. He blamed stress, he blamed money, he blamed misunderstandings. He blamed himself only in vague ways, never specifically, never for the act itself. That mattered. As the hours passed, investigators watched for fatigue, for slips, for moments where rehearsed answers gave way to reaction. They did not rush it. Pressure works best when it feels inescapable. The turning point did not come with a confession. It came with convergence. Forensics, timeline, digital records, witness statements all pointed in the same direction, not dramatically, quietly, relentlessly. By the end of the day, detectives knew they had enough to move forward. Not to tell a story, to support a charge. The abuse that had gone unseen was no longer invisible. It was documented, it was contextualized, it was tied to a final act that ended a life. The question was no longer what happened inside that apartment, it was how the system would respond now that the truth was no longer hidden. The case moved toward its final phase, carrying with it the weight of everything that had been missed before it was too late. Chapter 3, The Cost. The decision to move forward came quietly. No press conference, no public announcement. Just paperwork, signatures, and a clear line drawn between what investigators believed and what they could prove. Prosecutors reviewed the case file in full, scene documentation, autopsy findings, interview transcripts, digital records. Each piece stood on its own. Together, they formed a narrow and solid path. The charge was approved. The partner was taken into custody without incident. There was no chase, no spectacle. Officers arrived, informed him of the charge, and placed him in handcuffs. He did not resist. He asked few questions. The reality had already settled in. The formal accusation stated that Siandria Davis had been killed inside her apartment by the person she lived with. The language was restrained. No emotional phrasing, just facts supported by evidence. In court, the prosecution outlined the case carefully. This was not framed as a sudden loss of control. It was framed as an act that followed a documented pattern of domination and violence. Not every incident had been reported. Not every warning sign had been recognized. But the pattern was clear enough to explain the final outcome. The defense challenged the narrative. They argued stress. They argued mutual conflict. They argued absence of prior arrests. Each argument was met with evidence rather than rhetoric. The medical examiner testified to cause and manner of death. The findings were presented plainly, no exaggeration, no unnecessary detail. The conclusion stood firm. Investigators testified to the timeline, the digital evidence, the inconsistencies in the defendant's statements, the convergence that led to probable cause. The jury was shown how the case moved from uncertainty to clarity. There was no single dramatic moment, no confession replayed, no surprise witness. The weight came from accumulation, from the way each piece supported the next. The verdict was delivered after deliberation. The outcome reflected the evidence presented. Accountability was assigned through the legal process. Sentencing followed. The court acknowledged the loss of life, the impact on the children left behind, the absence of any path toward repair. The punishment reflected the severity of the crime and the responsibility established at trial. For Ciandria Davis's family, the courtroom was not closure. It was an ending to one phase of pain and the beginning of another. Justice did not return her. It only named what had been taken. The children were placed in the care of family. Their lives continued under the shadow of a truth they would one day have to understand. The system noted them in statements. The court recognized them, but the burden they carried could not be addressed by any ruling. Outside the courtroom, the case faded from headlines, as most domestic homicide cases do. There were no sweeping reforms announced, no viral outrage, just another file closed, another statistic added. Investigators reflected privately on what had been missed: the lack of prior reports, the absence of formal complaints, the way abuse can exist in plain sight without leaving a paper trail until it turns fatal. This case did not fail because no one cared. It failed because hidden violence often looks like normal life from the outside. Arguments that seem ordinary, apologies that sound sincere, silence that feels easier than confrontation. In the final review, the case was classified and archived. The evidence remained, the record remained, the truth as established in court remained. But the larger question stayed open. How many warning signs go unrecognized because they do not arrive with sirens? How many patterns remain invisible because they unfold behind closed doors? How many victims are careful enough to protect their families, even as they are being harmed? The murder of Ciandria Davis did not begin on the day she died. It ended there. The cost was measured not only in years sentenced, but in the quiet spaces left behind. A home that would never feel the same. Children growing up without their mother. A case that now serves as a reminder of what hidden abuse can become when it is allowed to deepen unchecked. The file was closed, the damage was permanent.